Welcome to the Bungo Pony Podcast with Brian Watson and Jim Griffin.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Bouchard, and you're listening to the Bungo Pony Podcast.
Yes, fooling you. No, Jim, on this one. This is another bonus Bungo episode with friend of the pod and friend of mine, Dave Dawson, who's here to speak about an interesting, nay, exciting development in the world of rock music publishing. Hello, Dave.
Hello, mate. How are you? Lovely to speak to you again.
Very good. It's a pleasure as always.
Mutual.
We spoke last whilst this book was in the planning preparation stage, didn't we?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think at that point we were just I was just getting my rights back from Unbound, and I was collating new replies, and the edit has been brutal because I had 300 letters to choose from, and because I put this together literally from cover to cover by myself, it's been grueling, shall we say? But it's
I can imagine.
Character building, that's the word I'm looking for.
And when we spoke, you teased that of interest to our listeners, there was a letter from a certain member of Blue Oyster Cult, and that, as they say, has transpired, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I reached out just a matter of luck. I didn't think I'd get anything back, but I approached Albert Bouchard and asked if he wanted to get involved, and he sent me a beautiful message back. He just said basically, I like your attitude. I like the idea of the project, and so I put together this ridiculous letter, which we'll get to, and he came back with. It took a few months for him to come back because he's a busy bloke. But when he came back, he came back quick. I said, I'm just, because what you have to do with these pop stars is you've got to walk that tightrope between being forgotten about and being a pain in the butt, you know.
Yeah.
But what I find though is when you say the word deadline to people, it just like spurs them into action, you know. So he came back a couple of days later to my last email. It was brilliant. Yeah.
Excellent. For those who don't know what we're talking about, or who, since they listened to our last chat together, have forgotten, because let's face it, we are all getting on a bit.
Yeah. we are indeed.
The book we're talking about is the third in a series of parody comedy books. I'll hand over to you. Mr. Popstar. Just tell us about the genesis. In about 45 seconds.
Basically, it's a series of tongue-in-cheek letters to rock and pop legends, often deliberately getting the wrong end of the stick about their lyrics, and inviting them to come back and write whatever they like. We like to tell the pop stars, look, just imagine we're that weird bloke that barges backstage that's got a laminate somehow and starts talking to you about what your songs are about. We're that guy. And they go, oh yeah, we know him. We've wanted to vent our spleen against him for years.
Especially in the prog community, we all know
absolutely we do. Absolutely we do. And so we invite them just to come back. So there's no trickery involved, Brian. We just tell them this is what we're doing. And they love it. I mean, Rupert Hine, the Rush producer, was at our book launch in 2018. And he said to us, you know, you're allowing us to just tap into that mischievous side that we've all got. And we've got nothing to do on the tour bus. And it's just a bit of a laugh. So this is actually our fourth book, because we had Dear Mr. Kershaw. We had Dear Mr. Popstar, the first edition. We've got Grammar Free in the UK, which is punk only. But this is the new edition of Dear Mr. Popstar, because we took the rights back from Unbound and Penguin. They kindly gave us our rights back because we prefer being DIY. We prefer being cottagey. And I've put it out with 50% extra content. And Blue Oyster Cult is one of the letters that's the extra content.
Just to clarify, you don't prefer cottaging, is it? That's a
cottagey.
Cottaging is a different thing altogether.
Well, there's a lot of cheese in our book, so it's cottage cheese. How's that?
Excellent. You've been doing this for a while. When was the first book released? It's years, isn't it?
Well, the whole concept started in 2008, where we just had this website of unanswered letters, and we thought that was funny enough. And but we built up this strong Facebook community, only of about a couple of hundred people. And because we tried initially to get replies through management, and obviously that went down well, didn't get anything back at all. But we started to, the first reply we got was from Peter Hamill from Van de Graaff Generator. And as soon as we found out that we could perhaps get, you know, an interactive thing going through our Facebook friends contacting the artists because they were like roadies or big fans or their connections, we sort of realized we had a book. So the first one came out in 2014. We crowdfunded that because I sent it to 100 publishers and they all basically said, "Slingy Rook, there's no market for this." So which is another reason why I've decided to go DIY again, because when we speak to the artists and we say, "Look, we've got the rights, but we're going DIY," they are absolutely, totally all over us, because a lot of the artists are doing the same thing themselves now. They're setting up their own labels and they're putting out their own product.
Yeah, I mean, the contents list of artists who you've got for this new edition of Dear Mr. Popstar, which is available at all recognisable internet retailers that sell, but you Amazon, I basically mean Amazon.
It's Amazon.
But yeah, you can get it in America as well for all our listeners over there. And it is, I'm not on a percentage here, because a large percentage of the profits go to homeless charities, far more deserving, far more deserving than I. But our Blue Oyster Cult friends will recognise some of the artists you've got for this one.
Oh, absolutely. I did a podcast last week for this American American podcast, and the names that leapt out at him were like Supertramp, The Knack, The Waitresses, Starship, like Blue Oyster Cult, as you say.
Purple, they'll know Purple, they'll know Gillan and Saxon, and good God, everybody.
Eurythmics, I mean, all the Live Aid acts we've got in there, like Nick Kershaw. So I have 300 letters to pick from, Brian. So the edit was absolutely brutal. It was wince-inducing to do it. But I've tried to make it as international as possible. But I've still got some specialist British bands in there, like Secret Affair and, you know, The Chords. Because
one of my favourites, Wang Chung as well.
Brilliant. Do you know, for so long, I thought Wang Chung were American. I was so...
No, it's Jack Hughes, isn't it?
It's Nick Feldman I dealt with. And, yeah,
Jack Hughes is a solo artiste.
Oh, I didn't know that. It's, again, the stuff you learn doing this, it's just incredible. You know, you learn about the family trees and stuff. But now I wanted to make it international, but it's already selling in Canada and America, and because Lamal is colossal in America. So a lot of his fans have bought it, and they've come back and said, "Oh, I can't believe you've got..." And Spandau Ballet are big in America as well. So, yeah, it does translate. I reckon the Americans will probably know about 60% of those artists.
If not more. But Americans may know Wang Chung as the composers of the soundtrack to the film by William Friedkin, To Live and Die in L.A., which is one of the finest films ever made, in my humble opinion.
Of course they did that, because we've got Mental as Anything as well, because that was Live It Up, that was Crocodile Dundee, but I'd never connected that with Wang Chung before, of course. And they're lovely people as well. I mean, Nick actually gave us a 4-page reply, and I said, "Look, I've got so little space here in it. Do you mind if I chop it down with your consent down to a couple of pages? Because otherwise I'm not going to cram everything in." But I did a quite a respectful edit on it, and he was delighted with it. Yeah,
I know. I think I first heard about you doing Marillion on your YouTube channel, didn't I? And we've got a mutual friend in Joe Kearney, haven't we?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Joe. Again, I said to you before, I'm a big neo. I'm not sure if you're supposed to say neo prog anymore. I think it's been cancelled. But I'm a, you know, a big fan of, like, you know, that second wave of prog, like 12th Night, IQ, Palace, Marillion, Solstice. And I just can't see how that band dropped up, you know, didn't come onto my radar, really. I think they're brilliant, that band.
Very excited to be going to Fusion Festival in a couple of weeks myself. and some Progzilla people. We're going to be there for 4 days. IQ, a centrepiece of the headlining on the Saturday, which I'm very giddy about.
Oh, yeah. What's not to love? I don't think I've seen them for years. I used to go and see IQ supporting other bands. I used to go specifically to see main bands if IQ was supporting. But unfortunately, I never saw them with Pete first time round, which is I missed it just by about 6 months after he left. But there you go.
They're quite wonderful. It was in the 21st century, I think, that I first saw them. So I kind of missed them when they came round the first time. But I think I saw them at the end of the 90s or the beginning of the noughties. And I thought, not know about this band? It's just Marillion just sucked in all the disposable income of working class teenagers, I guess. And there was no internet.
They certainly did, but they also. But I mean, I got into Marillion through Kerrang because I was a metalhead, and Marillion were like this crossover band that brought us all into prog, really. So, but when I wrote to Albert Bouchard, he was already aware of me because I'd done that ridiculous cover of Dominance and Submission,
which we've played on the pod, haven't we?
Yeah, but I'm not sure if I did tell you that when after Albert came back. And said that he'd be involved in the book. I then got a reply back from completely unrelated. I had a reply back from Joe as well, Joe Bouchard as well.
Oh, and, wonderful. You didn't tell us that.
No, I didn't. Well, I said to him, look, I said, Albert's beaten you by a week, but I mean, I'm happy. If you want to do a joint letter, it's up to you. It was Albert that stepped up to the plate in the end. But Joe says something interesting about my cover. He said that he could see Dominance and Submission. It put him in mind of Dominance and Submission being done as a big band arrangement with someone like, he said, I've always thought of Tony Bennett singing that to a big band arrangement. And if you do that in your head, you can really hear it.
That would be wonderful. Yeah. That would be wonderful. Have you started doing any Blue Oyster Cult covers for your audience that you...
that was something I did through lockdown when we were all going into brain melting phase and I had nothing to do. But now that I'm full on with the book again, I'm back to gigging as well. I'm gigging today.
It did help to keep, it did help to keep us sane. That,
yeah, good. Glad to be of service.
So we're going to read out your letter now. Do you want to be? Derek.
I'll be me.
Do you want to be Derek?
I'll be me, and you can do.
Because we have to say that the book is not. So don't look for Dave Dawson when you're searching for the author.
Yeah,
it's D and D Philpott. Who are D and D Philpott? Quickly.
Well, we decided not to write. I mean that's me and my dad because I used to play my dad records and write down what he said. But I've been the main writer now for about 5 years, and we decided just to use pseudonyms because we thought if we hide it behind a mask and we have false names, we at the point where a normal person would stop and go, stop it, this is silly. If we're writing under a false name, we can just use that as our starting point and just be as utterly ridiculous as possible, which I think we've achieved. I think you'd agree. I'm just going to get this letter up for Blue Oyster Cult. So here we are.
So you're going to be you and I'm going to be Albert.
Yeah, here we go. So there we go. Okay, page. Yes. Okay, here we go. So here we are then. Dear Mr. Bouchard, I am afraid, Sad Clam Sect, crossed out, Blue Oyster Cult, I doubt your reasoning as to why climate-based year segments, gusts, hydrogen stroke helium masses, or drizzles appear to be nonchalant. It is not because they are subhuman. Seasons, the wind, the sun, and the rain, not fearing anything at all, is not an attribute redolent of bravado. It is because none of them are sentient beings equipped with emotional traits. Furthermore, one of my true confessions is that I once ventured into a crop circle in Wiltshire without the farmer's permission, just as the barley was being harvested by a 333 horsepower John Deere S760. It is to be regarded with dread, especially when in close proximity to the threshing black blades rotating at 2,443 RPM. Too Much Revolution. Yours, D. Philpott.
Dear Dr. Philpott, I'm not going to do an American accent, by the way.
Oh, God.
No, God, no. I'll sound like a Welsh Asian.
Go on, then.
Dear Dr. Philpott, I can understand your confusion. It's not often that something as abstract as the weather is ascribed anthropomorphic qualities. That being said, though, it is a device that is often used in poetry and in occasional pop songs. As to the second part of your missive, I find that your cavalier attitude towards a John Deere S370 is somewhat of a concern, particularly with blades rotating at such a speed. Who is in charge here, the farmer or the tractor itself? At that speed, it could probably rise to the heavens and take me away, or, in this case, take you away forever. In any case, I am not particularly fond of barley, so I would never do such a thing. Yours truly, Prince Omega, brackets, Albert Bouchard, close
Wonderful.
Brackets.
Do you know, I've just spotted something which I didn't pick up in the proofread. I'm not going to change it in the book because it's poetic license. I mention a John Deere S760 and he mentions a John Deere S370, which is half. What's he do? I've never spotted that. Do you think that was deliberate there, Brian?
I'm not sure. I mean, we are, Jim and I are hoping to speak to Albert on the pod soon, hopefully. So I'll make sure to ask him. He might be a closet tractor aficionado.
Yeah, that just seems like it's a bit... Yeah, why would you change that? I have no idea. Albert's been liking our tweets a bit because Devo got their letter and they very, very kindly pushed it all over their socials last week. So I'm imagining Albert might be a closet Devo fan, which isn't that much of a shock, really, is it? But you can ask him that as well, I suppose.
Oh, I'm going to. I'm hoping that we get to speak to him for about 17 hours. So that
I'm sure you would.
Oh, I could quite easily speak to him for that long. My entire existence and identity and being is predicated on me liking Blue Oyster Cult. In the 70s, when no one else did, in a working class northern town in England.
That's funny because I think we discussed it before. I got sort of sidetracked into Kiss from being into New Wave and Ian Dury and Blondie. I had a friend whose brother was into Kiss, and it was just around the time that the New Wave of British Heavy Metal was kicking in. So everyone was listening to Maiden and Diamond Head and Saxon and. But he took me down the American route. So he was doing me compilation tracks of Angel and Stars and Cheap Trick and Blue Oyster Cult. And the first Blue Oyster Cult track I think I heard was ME262. And I was 13 years of age, it blew me head off. I'd heard nothing like it. And like you say, in England, nobody was listening to them. I thought they were incredible.
You're probably familiar with the pod. And we normally, me and Jim talk bobbins for 45 minutes to an hour about a playlist of some sort. I know I've dropped this on you and we haven't planned anything and prepared anything. Do you want, off the top of your head, because I know you've got loads of stuff to do, to pull together kind of a Dave Dawson fave five of tracks? We could start off with ME262. What do you reckon?
Oh, Blue Oyster Cult. Okay, I tell you, this is what we're going to do then. Okay, Blue Oyster Cult favourite tracks. ME262. The Marshall Plan. Sorry, I'm sorry if that's obscure.
One of my favourites. Me and Jim have chatted about it many, many times. But I used to do air guitar to this to some tune.
Yeah, Last Days of May, please.
Now, do you want the studio version or one of the many live versions?
No, I want this. I want the studio version, please. Cagey Cretins.
Oh, that's a good choice.
So, and probably what's the one? I learned how to play guitar. MC. What's that called?
Transmaniacon MC.
Yeah.
You want it, son? I'll play it.
I love it. I worked that out on guitar. It's a pick to play. The thing with Blur to Cult songs, you think they're, oh, that'll be easy to work out. And then you go and work it out, and you work out it's all in different time signatures, and the riff changes the second time. It's just genius.
Do you want to put Dominance and Submission on as well? So it's a sexy six.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's do that. Beautiful.
Seeing as you are a cover artiste, did you have to pay them royalties for your 500 views on YouTube?
I should have got a copyright strike because of the inferiority, really. But no, I got away with it. I didn't make any money.
I know you didn't. It's all one of the reasons I love you dearly is that you are the very definition of the, we've said it before, the cottage industry, the one man band, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, that's
doing see, what you love.
When I got the rights back for this book, I mean, the first thing I did was tell Crisis you're going to get a big chunk of it, because I tried to think of a model whereby you could go to a major and give money away, and I couldn't find one. So that was pretty essential that I got the rights back so that I could give a chunk of money away to Crisis, and they're delighted, bless them.
It's very touching, and
it's filling.
Everybody
filling to do it that way.
Everybody, yeah. But everybody needs to rush out and buy this book now.
Thank you. It's doing very well, Brian. I'm not saying it just for PR purposes, but yeah, we're delighted.
Well, you've got the world's shopfront, haven't you? In the form of, I know it's on Amazon, and people can debate till the cows come home about the pros and cons of that. But when you're wanting to sell a book, to cover your costs, make a bit of beer and Skittles money, and raise money for marvellous homeless charities, it's probably the only route. Because having it hidden away on a website behind a PayPal frontage.
It's the only route, and I say it from experience, because with the punk book and the first book, we literally had a few thousand copies printed, and we had to get them delivered to the house or to my friend's warehouse. And you're on a tightrope when you self-publish, because you don't know if you're printing enough or too much. You don't know if it's going to run out in the first week, and then you have a hole in the market that you can't fulfill, or if it's going to just sell half, and then you've got 500 books in your shed. It's just, I just didn't want to go through that again with physical stock, and that's why I've done Amazon this time. But everyone's happy, and we're happy.
Excellent. I think since we spoke, I had a little interim jingle, and I know we're nearer the end than the middle now, but do you remember that Blue Oyster Cult poster of all five of them on stage with the guitars? And I think Albert had his little leather shorts on.
Oh, yeah.
I got this made.
Hotter than Jim Griffin's leather shorts. This is the Bungo Pony Podcast. For all your Blue Oyster Cult related needs. And then some.
Wonderful. That's an enduring image.
It is. He talks up often and profusely.
Fantastic.
I welcome the time you've given us. I know you're mega busy because you have a life in and amongst all this publishing nonsense, don't you? Where you have to put food on your table and things. So do you ever get time to sleep?
I've got a very understanding wife, and she helps me a lot. I've got a gig today, so I've got to go to Shaftesbury in a minute to go and do an hour in a care home. But I think the fact that I do the job that I do means that the book is the success that it is, because I've luckily got enough time to format it. I mean, I designed it from cover to cover. I did the formatting, the edit, the proofread and everything. And luckily, because I've got a job that only takes up 4 hours of my day, i.e. travel to from setting up and doing the gig, it's I'm in a fortunate position here. Yeah.
Excellent. I shall keep you no longer then, Dave.
Thanks a lot, mate.
The book is called Dear Mr. Popstar. It's available at Amazon in Europe and the UK and America. If you order it today, you'll probably get it tomorrow.
Yeah, they do. They do. I'm very impressed with that part of it. Okay. Well, thanks a lot, mate. Let me know when this goes out and I'll tell my socials, okay?
Will do. Ta-ta.
Okay. Take care, mate. See you later.
The Bungo Pony Podcast has left the building. Join us next time for more Jolly Badinage.